And we are live. This is Dark Journalists. What a fantastic crowd we have out there tonight in the Ideas Room already. Of course, I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, I guess it's Loving the Alien.
Indeed.
UFO hearings. Mm-hmm. And in a peculiar setting, too, run by basically Homeland Security and counterintelligence, counterterrorism. It's a very weird place to do a UFO hearing, in fact. And we're going to find out that all the key players in that hearing were deeply associated with the Department of Homeland Security or the Central Intelligence Agency. Isn't that fun?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of those things, there's more than meets the eye, but we're going to get into what the real UFO file war is all about tonight and the main players there. And, you know, as usual, they pumped this thing up and they brought us into this weird, you know, piece of they're going to target citizens who are into UFOs and doing their own research. And so we have some information on this. It's basically, it was just a dress rehearsal for Homeland Security and domestic terrorism bills under the guise and under the clothing of a UFO threat with the UAP jargon, which is just junk. It's totally useless. UAP doesn't mean anything, and we shouldn't let them rebrand UFOs anyway, because we know when they go to rebrand things, what happens is you end up with the homeland instead of the United States of America. United States of America has a constitution that defends your rights. Homeland has a bunch of greedy continuity of government people at the top. So it's a very big difference. And we're going to get into these things tonight. I think it is important, just like when they move the UFO thing into the mainstream, they're doing it for a reason, because of course they've been hiding it through the CIA and the media and the deep state apparatus holding that secret for close to 80 years and longer, really, but at least that we know of in detail, but I would say actually much longer. But, you know, so this idea that, oh, you know, it's kind of like when a company CEO gets found embezzling, you know, and finds out the whole company is a big shell corporation. And then he's the one, I'm just as surprised as everybody else, you know, like, what are these UFOs? Gosh, golly. In fact, they've been studying them inside and out for 8 decades, as I mentioned. And so, therefore, they know a great deal about them. They know way more than the public does, and they know a lot more than they're willing to say. So some flexing and some factional infighting and things of this nature, really not impressive in terms of transparency at all. As a matter of fact, I think what you have are tiers of people with the CIA and Homeland Security knowing a good deal and the CIA X-Protect group actually holding the top information about the secrecy around UFOs. And as we've talked about with X-Protect before, a very dangerous group called in earlier times in the 50s and 60s, the Silence Group. And think about that, guys from the Air Force who came out like Donald Kehoe and others were very aghast that this whole structure existed when they came out and started talking about UFOs and got into such trouble as a result. So I think that the Silence Group, you know, we come to know them through different ways, and the Men in Black are operational in that as well. And there's more to the Men in Black than meets the eye, certainly than meets the pop culture eye. So we have a whole group there that's dedicated to this kind of secrecy, but it's not just secrecy around the fact that there are aliens out there. I think it relates more to the technology that's held in that UFO file, which is X technology, and that gets into so much of the work that we do here on this program. So we're going to hit on all that tonight. We're going to do about 90 minutes for the special report tonight, and we will take your questions in the last half hour. Miss Olivia, before I dive in.
Mikkel Grum says, it was a lame nothing burger. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. Leave it to the government to make UFOs boring.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. When you don't, you know, it's like when Elizondo talks. And just, you know, you talk round and round in circles and people just get tired. And that's kind of the point.
It puts you in a daze, in a trance.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. It's meant to wear you down to a certain degree. There are little things in there that show what they're leading up to, though. And there's a very interesting conversation that takes place between Congressman LaHood and one of the main people that was featured here. It's some very unusual combinations of personalities going on. But LaHood is going back and forth and doing this questioning. And what he says is, you know, well, what are you going to do? You know, when somebody independently goes into this stuff and they get, you know, these crazy stories out there, if they're an amateur, you know, what are you going to do? And how can you deter them? And he starts raising the possibility and the specter that people who are reporting UFOs or doing their own research are subject to prosecution. So under that very tenet, shows like this and things that we do in our dark journalism could be subject to prosecution under the Homeland Security Biden UFO protocol. So think about what this circus is really all about. And then let's get real, everybody, now. It's not a UFO invasion. It's a CIA invasion of the UFO file. That's totally different. So can we all get on board with that now? And can people who are in the field, like Dolan and Knapp, stop dancing around the fact that these are a bunch of CIA agents coming in like vultures to take over the field? It's over. We already know. So, you know, there's not going to be any movies or documentaries or TV thing that are going to gloss over that fact. So you're looking at the Central Intelligence Agency moving in, and they've been moving in for a long time, but they moved in openly with the To the Stars Academy. And, you know, through figures like Elizondo and Jim Semivan, who is a 25-year veteran of the CIA directorate, you know, it's the top level, in other words. And this guy is now a contactee, too. So he checks all the boxes on the way up. But let's not forget, he's the, you know, the top tier executive for the TTSA. So the CIA rollout of this thing, the only way it was done was through the acquiescence of the media and, you know, this whole sort of the people in the UFO field bowing down to this New York Times article. And that's just the way it went, showing how that field has really lost so much of its gravitas. It doesn't need to be that way. It's a very important field, in fact. But the people that are around it now, you have either sensationalists or people who are just controlled. So that's tough. That's tough. You need a different type of branch to investigate these things. And, you know, I always name names on this show. So, like, you know, the whole Corbell circusy wing of things, Elizondo, CIA trash, you know, you got to take all that stuff out and get to the real points of this. If these people want to talk about UFOs in Congress, then you have to go to the obvious. The first question in any Senate congressional hearing should be, all right, if we have kept this secrecy for 8 decades, has anyone on a high level basis been killed as a result of holding that information? One, two, have reputations been destroyed as part of an active program within the Central Intelligence Agency to destroy any possible leaks out there in the public relating to X technology that comes directly out of the UFO file? By the way, since you're talking to the Central Intelligence Agency, why don't you release the JFK records to see if there's anything about the assassination of President Kennedy that relates to the UFO file? Those things are right with your right in your control. What did they do instead? They went after amateurs. They said, oh, those terrible amateurs. You know what they might do? They might actually lead us into disinformation. We're looking at ways to prosecute them. Now, it's very interesting. The guy who was LaHood, who's doing this questioning, he has a very interesting background because he's now a congressman for Illinois. But for a good long time, this guy served as the state's attorney general in Las Vegas, Nevada. So think about that. So U.S. attorney in Las Vegas, Nevada, what does that get you into? Well, certainly you think about the mafia, but you're close to so many of these sacred facilities and your jurisdiction is Area 51. So here we have this guy talking and sort of egging on this Defense Department official about how they can prosecute average citizens. That's the key takeaway, in fact, from the entire hearing. There's a few things that they decided to read into the record that were absurd. Like the Wilson documents and things of that nature, which shows that, John Greenwald actually pointed out this, which is that sometimes they'll put things like that in the record so they can go back later and say, oh, we got hoaxed. And unfortunately, I think that's exactly what you're looking at. Everyone, you're here watching the Dark Journalist special report, and we are here after this kind of very off-the-wall Senate intelligence hearing on disinformation or counterterrorism, or was it the UFO UAP presence? Gee, it seemed like some blend of all three. We're going to be taking your questions in the last half hour. We're just going to do go to about maybe 10:30 or so tonight. And it's great to have everyone here. It's a huge crowd for a Tuesday night. I know there's a lot of reports spinning off this. I think the media was trying to amp this up. And, you know, the media has been in a weird position about this because a lot of people in the media don't know anything about UFOs. And you have the drop on them big time. So give yourself a pat on the back. But they just don't. And they write the most immature articles. There was an article written in The New Yorker, and I did some looking into the guy. The guy was, I think he was 27 years old, and he just didn't know anything. And he was, you know, throwing all these things out, and it's like, you know, the Rolodex version of ufology. And then they're like, and thank God we got to 2017 and the big disclosures from the Department of Defense. And so, you know, we're stuck in this weird loop with it, which is they want to take this into 2017. We discovered UFOs, and, you know, they don't want to admit to the 8 decades of suppressing everything and putting in place a repressive intelligence regime to do that. So you can't get anywhere with them saying, well, we don't know what it is. Maybe it's them Russians, right? Those Ruskies are right on our tail. These types of things, you know, we really have to throw that out. The way I look at it, we have to get ourselves into a frame of mind where we just know that when you get to congressional hearings, people are going to sit down and they'll have, you know, here's Grand Poobah One, and he has such and such and such a title. And he's going to say, well, we're going to analyze the data, and we're going to try to, you know, compare our analysis with other people who are analyzing the data and arrive at some kind of conclusion. You know, it's just going to go on like that. So no one's going to learn anything. And if they say anything of consequence in there, then those people are going to lose their jobs. So we're not going to find out anything from hearings like this, unfortunately, unless you had a real wild card senator in there. But what I saw was the questions that were being asked seemed like they were set, like the people who knew them in advance were taking questions. I'm going to show some of those tonight. But let's get into...
Do you mean that they were cleared in advance?
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they went into a closed session afterwards, so they were probably like, hey.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, see, that makes all the difference. Here's the thing. If you know you're going into a closed session, so if there's all these softballs in the public session, so what? You know, you can get real answers. And they're probably just wink at them and say, don't worry, don't ask us anything real here. We'll all answer you in the back room. So it's an exercise in futility, but that is the nature of how
that's infuriating.
I agree. So let's get into some of the players. Now, of course, it's Carson who was the chair of the whole meeting and the entire session. And Carson is particularly interesting as a congressman because there's nothing, when you look at his background, that would tie him in. I keep looking at a lot of these people who are suddenly into UFOs and thinking to myself, why? Any particular reason? You know, Gillibrand? Why would these people have a great interest in it? Marco Rubio. You know, his biggest claim to fame is that he ran for president and he's a neocon. What's that got to do with UFOs? We need to start to see the people that they're putting on board and what's going on there. And what I'm getting is a distinct counterintelligence, counterterrorism flavor, which is a very different thing. And to me, that says that they're going to use the UFO file and all the things that they're coming out with as another way to turn on the citizens. You know, the citizens aren't reporting this right. They're messing things up for us. It's a threat to us. Therefore, if you talk about it, it's a threat. You can't talk about it anymore. Let's look at Carson. Carson is actually out of a Homeland Security Fusion Center. All right, this is where they pull information. And this used to be illegal, but since they pulled the September 11th emergency plan in those fusion centers, you can do all kinds of going through people's personal files and all sorts of things about their background, etc. So when we look at that, we have to take a look at who the people are that are chairing these things instantly right off the bat. you've got him with Homeland Security. The problem with Homeland Security is an organization that's completely extra-constitutional, 250,000 employees. Okay, think about that. You go to 250,000 employees, and pretty soon the job becomes very different from what it started out as. You know, originally, watch for militant extremist Muslims coming in ready to wreak havoc on our airspace, you know, by taking over and hijacking a plane, to let's bust up this flea market. And I swear to God, one of the divisions of Homeland Security is to go into these flea markets and bust them up. Now they need to put them in a role of creating the domestic terror environment, which they tried to do with J6. They're still having a hard time. They're hanging on to it, you know, by the skin of their teeth, and they're trying to get some kind of domestic terrorism bill out of that. It's not working out very well, but maybe as long as they keep Liz Cheney over there, who cares, right? Please just keep her off the news. Let's go back in time a little bit on the UFO file. And of course, you know, when you look, one of the great cases early on in terms of someone who got rubbed out by the X-Protect group, the Silence group, is Morris Jessup. Now, Jessup had come into the field, and he'd come from multidisciplinary background. He'd done astronomy, he'd done archaeology. He was, you know, this is somebody who ran businesses in South America. I mean, he was a real Renaissance man. And when he came into the UFO field, he was bringing a respectability to it that they just couldn't hang with. So once he got involved around the work of T.T. Brown through the Philadelphia Experiment and all these things about the annotated version of his book, which I think is very powerful, that this whole thing came up. And, you know, the person who sent these annotations on his book sent them to the Navy, and basically revealing how UFOs operated and how that was related to the Philadelphia Experiment, which is all related to the X technology. Well, that was too much. And at the time, Jessup's good friend was J. Manson Valentine, who was a Yale oceanographer, and he was someone who would eventually end up finding the Bimini Road. So we're getting into all kinds of interesting territory here when we get around Jessup. But in any case, on his way over to see his friend Valentine to discuss very important matters and things that he had discovered about the UFO file on his fourth book, he ends up in a park with carbon monoxide in his car, and that's the end of Jessup. But what's interesting when we think about Jessup, I want to really say it's a clear-cut case of someone who was changing the narrative around the UFO file ahead of the X-Protect group, which relates directly to an aerospace wing that's connected to the Central Intelligence Agency. Central Intelligence Agency didn't come up today, but a lot of people doing questioning and, you know, giving answers and all that stuff, they were all CIA people. You know, that wasn't their top first credential that they put out there. So we didn't get anything. And that's part of the problem also in the UFO field when dealing with this. Nobody is talking. You know, the two reporters that did a decent job in the week leading up to this were John Greenwald and Stephen Greenstreet. Now, Greenstreet works for the New York Post, all right? So you're not going to get anything hardcore and real. You're just going to get kind of the floaty surface stuff. And I understand that. Just like Tucker Carlson, you know, he's going to have Elizondo on and think that's an edgy thing to do, right? I'm covering UFOs. Well, it's a CIA person pretending to release information about UFOs. That's pretty different. Pretending there's a program called ATIP. You know, now we know there's no program that was called ATIP. How do you like that? 4 years too late. So it was a Fig Newton of Lou's imagination, in fact. And even he... this came out, which is that Elizondo himself even said, well, it wasn't a program. Just think of it more of as an activity. Well, you know, playing darts is an activity. I mean, what are you talking about? It's a program or it's not a program. Let's get real, you know. So this is interesting to me because the same people that were promoting Elizondo have started to shift. This started with Brian Bender, Bender at Politico is the person who got the TTSA story afloat and was the second source to confirm for the New York Times. That's how this whole junk version of UFO disclosure happened. And Bender, I had a few things with him on Twitter. I won't even get into it because it's so stupid. But in fact, what he was saying was, don't you dare question TTSA. And then he got on their shows and, you know, he did all this stuff on the History Channel on that terrible show that they put out there. And what happened with this whole thing is that Bender was kind of their support. He was the one who was saying there is national security interest in this. There is a threat, you know, and these guys are getting into it. So he was a de facto go-to for these guys. That's how you get the New York Times article. But the source that he relied on for getting that story confirmed about Elizondo and the videos and all that stuff was a corrupt official inside the Pentagon who actually got demoted very shortly afterwards for bribery and thrown out. So that's hardly a person to base the story on. You know, and then when we go further down the road, now some of those people, like this Green Street guy, he's doing videos and saying, I was had by Elizondo. Bender started to say, well, the original story on TTSA may not have been the actual story. Maybe we all should have asked more questions. Well, it felt pretty lonely when I was doing it. It was me and a couple of people. And all those people could say in the UFO field or in the media was, you know, and what's worse is that it's in the UFO field that they were doing this. They were saying, oh, you know, how dare you question TTSA and this type of thing. So we have to get real that they rolled out this op. The mainstream media got on board because they were instructed to, and the UFO media and the alternative research media, a lot of them jumped on board because they thought there was something in it for them. In many cases, the people from TTSA, the DeLong group with Elizondo, they went to people and said, something big is going to go down and, you know, you guys are going to be part of it. So you just stick with us, and, you know, play ball. And I've heard a lot of stories from a lot of people and people that we all respect in the alternative research world. And in fact, that's how it went down. So they got a lot of people on board saying, if you stick with us, we'll give you the real enchilada. And they also told them, you'll be part of the big entertainment division that we're rolling out and all the rest. So, you know, there was a kind of, I want to put this word right, it's like intellectual bribery. it's not outright, I'm going to give you money to say something, but there is a bribery to it. And that's what they engaged in. And that's what we were working with here over the last 4 years. Now, with Gigi Young, I put out a report for New Year's 2018, going all through the TTSA, how it was set up by the CIA, who the people were who were behind it, and what it was made for. Now, that's only 3 months after it was created. And it was only a month after, or less than a month after, they came out with the New York Times story. So that's there and that's on record. Since then, we've done a dozen programs on the CIA organization, TTSA and its branches of Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo. That's really, you know, what this hearing can help us do, which is, since UFOs are in focus, let's put the focus on the media faces for the UFO threat operation. That's Elizondo and Mellon and DeLong and Podesta. All those people, that whole thing should be outed for what it was, a CIA push that has gone awry and is trying to reconstitute itself and create a UFO threat operation, which is funded through the United States Congress and has becomes part of the emergency powers piece. And the next thing they're going to want to do is include, in continuity of government, an alien invasion. So that's what so much of this is about. And, you know, there were people in the field of UFO research, and I've mentioned it many times, it's just, you know, in a professional manner, but nonetheless, it has to be pointed out, people like Knapp, people like Dolan, people like Pope, who went hook, line, and sinker for this whole thing and suggested that anyone who was looking into it and the origins of it either were paranoid or would look like a fool later and all this kind of stuff. So there's a lot of weirdness to this. And you have to say to yourself, why were those people doing that? And, you know, now they're slowly tap dancing away in the background, you know, but for 4 years, they were holding up this thing while it was there. So when TTSA shatters after spending $50 million. Who pays that bill? I wonder about that. So, you know, and then they roll out this other thing that they're doing. And then we have the Elizondo thing with him in a book and Leslie Kane. And then suddenly people are starting to look at this who were for it and saying, I have to now disengage myself because it's going to come out about how the, you know, there are lies involved in setting this thing up. So you get the Green Street video, which does expose many of those lies. One of the most important lies is that ATIP doesn't exist. There is no ATIP. There's no such thing as Advanced Aerial Threat Identification Program. Doesn't exist. Got it? Let me repeat that one. There's nothing, there's no such thing as ATIP. It does not exist. There's a program called OSAP that was funded for $22 million. People used a nickname to keep it out of the records, but there's no such thing as ATIP. There's no program called ATIP. Later, Elizondo himself, in his own complaint letter, trying to clear his name and all this nonsense, he's talking about ATIP and he says, call it an activity versus a program, if you will. There's no program. There's no funding for ATIP, his thing, this weird thing that he made up, nicknamed ATIP. $22 million was funding for OSAP, which was on one hand about weapons and on the other hand about weird paranormal stuff going on down in the ranch. You know, we all know the ranch. So when Skinwalker Ranch and all the money that got released out there for Bob Bigelow through his friend Harry Reid, there was some kind of a thing in there. And the people who were in charge of that OSAP program said, well, about 97% of the activity was all based on this weapons thing and, like, you know, werewolves and things of this nature. And 3% were on UFOs. Okay, so there's no program. There's nothing. ATIP doesn't exist. So when you have these people being like, well, when ATIP came out and also it doesn't exist, it's not real. Let's get clear on that. And now that fog starts to lift. There's no such thing as ATIP. All right. Who's the leader of the non-real program, the imaginary program? The leader of the imaginary program is Lou Elizondo. So his role as director of ATIP doesn't exist because there is no ATIP. So now we've been running around and we've got, you know, him going on program like Tucker. And Tucker, you know, he gets a lot of good issues, but it's still Fox News. You're still working for the man. And you roll this out and here comes Elizondo saying, well, as in my program, ATIP. Well, ATIP didn't exist. It was a nickname for OSAP. And then your version, like whatever you did with it, was an activity, not a program, according to you. And then what happened afterwards? They stopped funding it in 2012, OSAP. There never was a program for the other thing. So as we have let you know over the past few years, this was all a CIA Mirage BS program. And this is what we've been in the middle of. But with all the media behind it, with the money behind it, with the History Channel behind it, with, you know, the UFO field behind it, that's what you get. And now we have some people, like I said, who are starting to come on board and say, well, this thing wasn't real and they didn't exactly tell us the truth, et cetera. But they're not getting into the fact that they were culpable as well because they assisted this whole thing. So guys like Green Street have actually come out and said, you know what, I was had, and this guy Elizondo, what he was doing actually was he was grooming me. That's pretty big language. And I see what he means, actually. And what's interesting is now this guy is, you know, for going into these things, Elizondo is releasing Corey Goodstyle programs on Twitter about this guy to try to take down his reputation. And he's created a thing for his enemies called the Felon Five. Does this sound like Corey Good? It really does. So that's where we're going with the Elizondo story. Somebody who comes straight out of the CIA milieu directly and, you know, through the DIA window or whatever, and who has now pumped himself up with the help of Leslie Kane, who's, you know, has a lot of interesting, weird things going on in her background, including the fact that her uncle is Governor Thomas Kane, who headed up the 9/11 Commission, not exactly known for transparency there. And also weird that Leslie Kane, her husband is Bud Hopkins. You know, that was her long-term partner, and she never mentions him And he was the, what, the king of abduction research. Mm-hmm. But she never has a word to say about him ever. I mean, he's passed away. Why doesn't he ever get mentioned? I mean, I would imagine that most of her UFO knowledge or whatever came through Bud Hopkins. But he's the great unmentionable. And unmentionables always bother me in dark journalism. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show, we're going deep, deep tonight on the UFO op. And this is really the UFO file war, because now it's going open. And this is the phase where they're going to fight with the narrative. And on the, you know, the front of that is going to, you're going to see people like Rubio and these other people grasping to get into this thing and hold the UFO file under their umbrella. And in the background, you're going to see the threat operation go into overdrive. And that's where they're heading with this thing, because a UFO threat gives you unlimited emergency powers. And these people love emergency powers. And they think they've snookered enough people with Netflix or whatever over the past 10 or 15 years to get them into this headspace that, like, oh, there is going to be a UFO threat. Hey, you know. And I remember distinctly when things were locked down and they just had people sitting at home in this ridiculous fascist overreach. But what they did was they re-rolled and they rolled the whole thing out again about TTSA and the Pentagon videos and all that nonsense. Now, remember that the TTSA videos, the key video comes from 2007 on YouTube, okay? You know, this is the weird thing for the Lou fanboys and the TTSA people. You know, they don't get the CIA part. They don't realize that their own organization they've been pumping up is a bunch of CIA people with over 100 years of CIA experience on the board. But also, you know, that the main players that are their people, that's actually, you know, on record. So now we have to look at this and start to see that they're under a weird spell or whatever. And they've just been, you know, through entrainment or just the media hopping them up. They just have a wrong idea of what it is. And what I think the people that are controlling this operation, they think with just the actual momentum of lies, they can get across the finish line. As long as enough people buckle and don't challenge them, which is why when the UFO field and the alternative research field didn't do anything, you know, didn't really take them to task for this, with a few exceptions, then, you know, they feel like, oh, they'll just roll it. You know, it's just a big lie, but we'll roll with the big lie. That's where this comes from. And so they have an ex-Pentagon official who probed UFOs for the U.S. government as part of a shadowy program has said the world is now finally facing up to the uncomfortable truth about the phenomena. Well, that's Elizondo. And as I just pointed out, there was no program that he was the leader of. So he's a counterintelligence agent. So he's given a lot of missions, I'm sure. And they say, well, we'll just give you the backstory, you know, but you can't do that backstory in this environment. It's too easy to crack it open. And so that's why there's a big split around the things that he came forward and said. What the people on the intelligence side realized is that there was a great theme going on in the UFO field. And that theme was whistleblower. The whistleblower came forward and said, so they created one. They just invented one. And his story was supposed to be, oh, I'm a disgruntled employee who wants to get these things out, and the government is stopping me. So now he can go on these programs like Tucker and say, the government really has to, you know, get that stuff out. But if you do 2 inches, and I mean 2 inches of research into Elizondo, he works for the government now. So he is the government. There's no way that a guy like that can say, we need to get that bad government, because he is the government. He's been working for them for over 2 decades, and CIA, DIA, all classified programs. I mean, come on, you know, so this is an op. And when you get to the shape of the op, then you realize you're in some dangerous territory and the UFO file wars are on. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist special report on this UFO Congress. I do feel like this is an interesting opportunity to see where they're going with it and to point it out and to use the kind of media hype in a different way. Not so much to go over the, you know, the new acronyms and the dumb stuff. They're calling it AMSOG now, which is one of the worst names in history. But for me, you know, when I look at this stuff, I'm seeing these people go into a tailspin and how we can, on the ground, the thing that they're afraid of, and they pointed it out themselves, I'm going to play that clip, which is they're afraid of amateur research, as they called it. That means anyone who isn't deemed an official on their side. Well, this is how they ran the COVID op, if you recall. And even when they got professionals against them, you know, they would shut those people down. But so many ops are run like this because we're the central authority, you know. Oh, there's a financial crash. There's going to be martial law if you don't give us $1 trillion right now. you know, so they need emergencies and they need to be the only authority in town and nobody can challenge that authority. So where they're rolling on the UFO side is, oh, it's a threat. You know, we need your money to defend against it. We need you to surrender emergency powers to us. And nobody else can talk about it but us, because that's misinformation. And they will be prosecuted by, what's the name of Biden's surrogate? Our friend Nina. So on the disinformation board, the DGB, right? That's the way this is going to all loop together. That's how you can really start to see those things funneling in together. So we're going to go, like I said, for another like hour or so. We'll take your questions in the last half hour. I got a lot of stuff to get to. Until then, Miss Olivia.
Okay. Ronald Decker says, Bigelow, Bigelow, Bigelow. Can DJ talk about Bigelow Aerospace and that company getting all the Air Force UFO reports from Air Force pilots?
Yes. Excellent point. Well, look, Bigelow is one of those companies, you know, it's like SpaceX, it's like Blue Origin, and they've been out there a long time. And Robert Bigelow, the whole idea was hotels in space, inflatable hotels in space is the cover story for their thing. But he's been a part of all kinds of different movements, including, you know, life after death. And he's gotten into all this metaphysical stuff. And so he operates as kind of an interface for the intelligence community to go into paranormal subjects on the record without, you know, people being able to trace it back. I'm sure he has his own distinct interests in the stuff himself.
Did you mention the werewolves?
I did. And, you know, I mean, look, I think that stuff is fun and everything, but it doesn't mean that Elizondo ever commanded a UFO program, you know, and whatever program he was a part of, he was doing counterintelligence. And look, a counterintelligence agent working for the government, you do what you're instructed to do. And so if he's working for the CIA in that role, he's gathering information in the Pentagon and, you know, they're creating this idea. You know, he might be somebody that we can build, create a legend about, and then release and say, aha, he was a whistleblower and he came out. Because they had a look at the hard facts that by the late, you know, like 2017, 2018, the top Google search was UFOs. If you go back earlier, even 3 or 4 years earlier, you're going to see something very strange, which is the UFO file and the reports, everything was blocked around UFOs, 2014, 2013. And there was a tremendous pushback. And the CIA, with one of their first tweets, came out and said, remember all those UFOs that were buzzing around the 50s, 60s, and 70s? It was us. That was just us. We were testing out new aircraft. There were no UFOs. So when the CIA wanted everyone to lock down and they didn't have their program ready, they were blocking access to it, which is, you know, the UFO file. We've had all of this blocking access over the years. Everybody's very familiar with that. That's where the whole release the truth thing came from about UFOs, right? Now, what's interesting is a lot of those people who were very big on like, hey, the government's holding secrets and all this stuff. And, you know, like some of them worked for the government who said that, right? And I always go back, like the people who should be a good front line for this kind of research, Pope and Knapp and Dolan, suddenly they went from the government is holding back research to, hey, don't you just love those CIA guys giving us disclosure? This is great. I love them. They've moved the needle. They've moved the culture. God, we owe them so much. No, no. In fact, you're wrong. And either you were shystered or you were part of the shyster. So, you know, at this point, since we all know that there was no program called ATIP, all those people should do some kind of mea culpa and say, you know what, we were wrong and we want the truth. Or they're going to look like they were helping these people push a falsehood through. To me, that's very dangerous territory, because what it says is, you know, your own trustworthiness as a public individual becomes at stake. So I would, you know, for people who've been supportive of this thing, I would really take a look at it and say, like, what happened? Because it's being shown, you know, even, you know, what happened, I think, with Elizondo going after Green Street. It's very interesting because Elizondo loves to go after people and get other people to go after them. I'm going to read some tweets that he did around this. And he created this thing called the Felon Five, which he included Green Street, Greer, Greenwald, Third Phase of Moon. Anyone who was against him, basically, or he felt like his competition. And
do you feel left out?
No, no, he know. I mean, a guy like Elizondo knows if he does that to dark journalists, he's going to find his ass in a New York law sling so fast, his head will spin. But it is interesting to me because when I look at it, you know, I see him like hitting out at people like Greenwald who tried to work with him and tried to actually, he knew that, oh, I can cooperate so far, but those people aren't going to cooperate with the lie CIA aspect of this. And so they, you know, he sort of sussed them out. People like Greer already have their own established space in the whole thing. So they're useless. All the people like Lou can do and the CIA can do is try to knock those people out. Now, whatever you want to say, pro or con about somebody like Greer, he represents something that is already established. So therefore, they don't want anything to do with it. They want to, you know, roll in and throw out the other guy. And this is very typical behavior on the CIA's part. But I will say that the whole thing that happened, and this happened before this UFO, you know, hearing came about, and also before the New York Post put out this expose about ATIP and Elizondo and TTSA. So everybody knew in the background that this thing was coming. And so there was a lot of frantic motions in the background. And, you know, Elizondo showed up in Washington for these. He didn't get called before the hearings, but he, you know, showed up there and he's taking his picture and being like, oh, this is a historic moment. And because he wants to keep linking himself with this whole thing, whether there's a link there or not. And I think the intelligence people that have propped him up are looking at him and being like, you know, like we've had a lot of missteps, and the group that's pushing him is like, no, he can do it. Like, you know, and he's going over the top. But as he goes more and more over the top, he starts to look like a cult leader that's unraveling. And that's where we get the Corey Good comparisons. And let me tell you, having been really up close in the Corey Good thing, this thing looks a lot like the Corey Good thing, except for the fact that this guy has a real, you know, military background. And Good was just a maintenance man. Now, when we get into this, though, you know, I'm going to just talk about a few steps that happened on Twitter on this, because I think it's important the way that the CIA operates when they're in trouble. So Elizondo gets himself into a situation where he hears that this is going to come out, and he leaks intentionally, and I kid you not, through a Twitter account called Richard Butt. Dick Butt, all right, which is anonymous. And he leaks this conversation that he has with somebody else. And this conversation, which later the two people involved in the conversation say, yeah, that's what happened, this is a weird thing. This is very much like, you know, how a low-level intelligence thing would try to use Twitter to their advantage. So they say, you know, he says, so he's talking to this person. This is Elizondo. And he says, honestly, I am tired of all the BS with the Felon Five. Okay, meaning, you know, five felons. Like these are, and Elizondo has said, oh, this is a criminal gang after me. And that's what's going on. They're criminals. So he goes, the Felon Five, Green Street, Greer, Greenwald, and Third Phase, and all the other BS artists. It's very sad that this important topic has been relegated to the fringe by all these hucksters and mentally unstable individuals. Have you looked in the mirror lately? It's an absolute crime to humanity. Here we go with crime again, right? Everything is a crime. If you disagree, you're a criminal. But the Felon Five was an interesting thing because later they backed off of it and said, oh, you know, that's a different five people. And there was a comment, you know, all this stuff. This is the type of trick that they use in like really dirty media or, you know, when a cult leader is really going down hard, and they start to grab onto these things of how can we take down our opponent. So once real questions started coming in, this type of weirdness is what we saw ourselves in the middle of. This is the CIA invasion of the UFO file. That's how it looks, and it's pretty ugly, because the group behind this type of stuff, they don't have any scruples. And when you get them into a public situation, watch out, because they'll use anything in public that they can get their hands on. So with this thing being kind of unstable and wobbly, you find these moments that when something comes in, is incoming, like the Green Street Report was, and like Greenwald's, some of his kind of leaning started to be sort of like, that story doesn't hold up so well anymore. So now we see people who were supporting it, like Brian Bender at Politico, being like, oh, we weren't told the truth about the whole thing. It was really about werewolves. And that leaves the person who claimed they were the leader of it, in a weird position. So that's where they have Elizondo now. And I think the intelligence groups are looking out and saying, can we accomplish it with this guy who's had like a lot of baggage? I don't know. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. You're getting the inside version of the UFO hearing here tonight. And this is a special report we're doing to really get at the root of what this UFO secrecy is about. We're going to be taking your questions here shortly, in about 15 minutes. Miss Olivia.
John Jones, what does Daniel think about Lou calling Dr. Stephen Greer a terrorist?
Yeah, I hadn't seen that. But you should email that to me at admin@darkjournalist.com. But the language is meant to shock, and it's like, it's also to send a message like, I will play dirty pool if you expose me, kind of thing. That's kind of typical antics. And what happens is that's usually a last phase. You know, it's when somebody's on the way down that they're doing that. When they're doing well, they actually don't respond to critics. And so when you find them, you know, freaking out like that, all the good, that's usually what it is. Yeah. What else you got?
I also think there's a kind of this attitude of back off, right? If you come on really strong with language, very hostile, overly hostile.
Yes.
For the critics in the audience who are not alpha males, right, who will take on that fight, they'll just back off, right? They'll woo, right?
Well, we saw weird things with Lou when it was the Rather Be Squidding guy. And
Here's
this, like, you know, pretty small channel. This guy does his own podcast, and he asks one tough question. It's the first tough question that's been asked of Elizondo. And it was, are you running Twitter sock puppet accounts? Which he was. And he said, well, you know, maybe some of those are people that I know, you know, and he sort of leans into this, and then he says, wait a minute, are you admitting that you're doing this? So that whole exchange, and what did he say to the squidding guy? He said, oh, your mom's a hooker. What if I said your mom's a hooker? You know, that shows you what's really going on there.
Well, it's a way of disarming people.
Yes.
Right?
When the mask drops, watch out.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're going to try to do is roll out, like, you know, these sessions, the phony CIA whistleblower, you know, the book, all this stuff. And they need to position that media behind this guy. But the support, I don't think, is there. So I think that they're doing a lot of this with imaginary support. And I think a lot of people are just looking past all that. Think about how rich and exciting the UFO field is. And then think about the level of CIA interference that we're talking about. Homeland Security saying that people who are, you know, amateurs in UFO might be prosecuted. Let's really think about that. I'm going to play that clip tonight as well. And, you know, not to mention the fact that we had a period just previous to this period, which included real, notable people in the field, nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, Dr. John Mack. I mean, so many important people that had done the research and felt like they were watching a cosmic Watergate with all the secrecy. So we sort of lost that era, and we got this freak show that was largely funded, and it's a group that's whipped up. It reminds me kind of like how George Soros creates groups, because they have to whip up a lot of attention. They're usually well-funded, and they have a lot of unstable people at the top. So we're definitely seeing a lot of that with this. I also think that, you know, it's hard once you've been somebody who's played this role. How do you back out exactly? There's no easy way to say, well, you know, all of the stuff that we said about ATIP and all that was all lying, you know, but don't worry. We lied for a good reason because, hey, you know, people are going to get that UFO disclosure after all. It doesn't work that way. When people see that you're a liar, then fundamentally the trust issue breaks down. The problem is in journalism, there's vetting. And with the Elizondo story, there was no vetting. There was Bender going to a corrupt official at the Pentagon for confirmation and that official being released, relieved of duty for bribery. So instantly, that's not a dependable situation. And that's what the New York Times stood up their Black Money UFO article in December 2017. That's how we got into this mess with those people confirming it. And Leslie Kain wrote the article along with two other people. You know, so there's a lot of accountability there, too. But what do they say to themselves? Well, I have an HBO special. I have a new biography. I have a new, you know, Elizondo says I have a new book coming out. You know, so they think, why not? You know, big deal. But it's not honest and it's not vetted. So at least that part needs to be made clear. In terms of speaking to the character, the people that we're talking about, it's really hard. But I think once you get on a roll and you're not challenged, you know, you get more and more out of bounds. And that's what we're looking at right now. A lot of out of bounds activity. Speaking of out of bounds, Kirsten Gillibrand. Let's talk about blackmail out of bounds. This is very important. Gillibrand, through her family, has deep, deep ties to British aerospace. And also, through her family, deep, deep ties to the NXIVM sex cult. We did an episode about her and Rubio and the kind of strange bedfellows that they make leading this UFO file thing, along with a congressman in Arizona, and how they attached this office, this, you know, AIMSOG is what they're calling it. They attached this office directly to this NDAA spending bill. Now, the NDAA is interesting because it cuts right to the heart of continuity of government work. And the continuity of government is a legal program, but it's a very hardcore, powerful program. And many of the deep events in our past in America have been controlled by people who are operational inside the continuity of government program on record. John Dean, for example, and his involvement in Watergate, Ollie North, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, these are all COG Central. They're the people who constructed the later version of COG. Continuity of government is an entire structure. It includes underground bunkers. It includes command centers, some known, some unknown. And it includes an entire infrastructure and a shadow black budget. And there's no oversight. And the intelligence oversight has to be incredibly limited because the idea of continuity of government is it's meant to be there and survive in the event of an emergency. Now, it was originally created to survive a nuclear emergency in the 40s and 50s. That actually made a lot of sense and goes back that way. But once it gets into this later period, it's a huge bureaucracy of its own. And there's a good deal of information to suggest that that public overt government was overtaken by this covert COG government right during the Kennedy assassination. And in fact, there were people operational in continuity of government who were using emergency communication system during the assassination. One of them was a Secret Service agent named Winston Lawson. So there's a lot of the emergency powers and emergency office personnel involved in every deep event in America, and the continuity of government people play a major role. In fact, continuity of government was put forward during 9/11, during the terrorist attacks, when they were shuttling off Dick Cheney to God knows where. It's interesting that he's one of the key people who created continuity of government and reimagined it in the 1980s as for any emergency, not just a nuclear one. So if you get riots, if you get food shortages, any emergency, continuity of government can be set up, and that's martial law. After 9/11, we had the Continuity of Government Program in a new edition, NORTHCOM. So we'd already had SOUTHCOM and thing, but this idea of a military branch running the United States, and this is still technically the situation that NORTHCOM would take over in the event of an emergency, and we are still under the 9/11 emergency. And every year this comes up and it gets signed off on, and this goes back to my initial comments about NDAA, because every president, whether it's Bush or Trump or Obama or Stepford Biden, or I have a new name for Biden. It's the king of inflation. You've seen that
inflation
one?
Inflation king?
The inflation
king. I don't know. It's too grand for him.
It's kind of like the king of town, right? But I do feel like, you know, we have to get our heads wrapped around this a little bit, which is every president signs that emergency proclamation when they sign on to get the $800 billion every year for the military-industrial complex. That's what the NDAA is all about. So when Gillibrand comes forward, who was handpicked as Hillary's successor and in the New York Senate, and, you know, it's interesting that Hillary takes a real key interest in Gillibrand, and Gillibrand actually ran for president, as did Rubio. So to see them both leading the UFO effort makes you wonder what's coming in 2024. But here's another player right in the middle of this hearing, just like Rubio. And I won't even talk about Shifty Schiff, Adam Schiff. It's horrible.
Talk about him.
Well, just to be having to deal with this guy. Look, this guy came up with the whole Russian collusion thing. He created these scenarios over and over again, and they all turned out to be completely bogus. And even the news report, you know, in like 60 Minutes style people who are corrupt anyway, they're like, hey, don't you want to take back all the things that you said about the Russian collusion thing? Because none of it was true. And he's like, no, I'm not convinced that I need to do that. You know, so they're just people who are going to lie to get somewhere. But this guy has always been, you know, when they had this guy as sort of the honorable guest of the whole event, I was like, this is really gives you some idea of the black budget nature of the entire UFO hearing. But let's go a little bit deeper with Senator Gillibrand. Her effort to study UFOs likely to become law. She's really the key point person on this. And I also see a potential presidential run involved with this. And this might relate to some of the things that they want on the table. For example, can we create a UFO emergency and then have a UFO expert politician step in and do this? And I think that part of the kind of theater that you're watching, and it's more like a vaudeville show with the hearings, has some of this, you know, trying out these different figures to see how far can we get them. Here we go. Rubio, Gillibrand, Gallego, who is the congressman from Ruben Gallego. He's the congressman from Arizona, and he has a very interesting background, which is that it's psychological warfare operations. And he was trained right over here at Harvard. All right. So Ruben, you know, being a part of this is also rather interesting. But wait, there's more. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report Tuesday night, and I said we're going to go to 10:30, which that gives me 9 minutes to get my thing out of the way before we go to Miss Olivia. And I want to remind everyone to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter. That's the thing that keeps us in touch and will really help us out through this incredible censorship wave that we're watching. Of course, we have a great group out there in the ideas room. And I want to say thanks to Kat out there as well. Miss Olivia is really running the show from here. What do you got?
Brenda Fisher caught that the AOIMSG is an anagram for amigos.
That's true. That's a terrible name. I'll read what it means here. It means Airborne Object Identification and Management Synchronization Group. And there are variations on this thing. Of course, in this ASRO, Anomaly Surveillance and Resolution Office, these are some of the worst names ever picked. But that thing is supposed to be called AIMSOG, the thing you just mentioned.
Where did they get AIMSOG?
I know. It doesn't really wash, does it? But that's what they were calling it today. And the guy frowned when he said it. And he said, maybe we'll change that name. Yeah, maybe. But I think that they did. This is another like, you know, who's going to be interested in this thing? And so I want to give 1 minute of advice for the UFO researchers and the UFO people, though, around the hearing today, which is, you know, you have to move in on the idea that this thing about a UFO invasion or UFO threat, that they push this heavily in the media, in Fox News and all that. And even the Tucker thing is getting into the threat BS. And he's using Elizondo, who's going to be, you know, like it's come out. He's discredited as being part of this program. So how can you even use him for your reports anymore? Somebody needs to call Tucker up and be like, you might want to look into the things that have come out here. But what I'm seeing is that what's happening with these programs is the UFO side really has an opportunity right now to kind of reclaim some type of position in all this. And all they need to work with is the idea that the CIA is behind the entire push. Now, I can tell you from my own research, that's exactly the case. The Central Intelligence Agency has set this entire thing up. They've set up the UFO threat. They've set up the whistleblowers. They set up TTSA. Why don't the people who are researching UFOs talk about the Central Intelligence Agency? What's the problem? What's the disconnect? I mean, is there a fear in doing it? You know?
Wait, can you restate that question?
Why don't people who are investigating the UFO field investigate the Central Intelligence Agency influence on it? Because that's what we're seeing. It's the Central Intelligence Agency that has arranged for TTSA. How many shows have I done doing that? I could do another show like that, but what's the point? So, you know, the CIA set that up. They're setting up the whole UFO threat through the media. All these people that were asking questions and giving weird answers all had either a CIA or Homeland Security background today. I mean, this is all CIA. So when they go in and do exposés or they're trying to get to the bottom of this stuff, and this includes even some of the good researchers, you know, the other people who are just supporting this thing, they don't even want to know, right? But it seems like whether it's on the want-to-know side, the need-to-know side, or people who are just letting this thing go, why is the CIA part left out? It doesn't make any sense. Do they not know?
Or is it that they're terrified of the CIA? Truly?
Yeah, it could be. It could be terror, or it could be a lack of knowledge. And I've stated this before, which is the field itself, you know, look, deep state research around political assassination. You have fantastic people who do that type of research. They know very well that the United States government engages in assassination and has the Central Intelligence Agency over its career has been hauled before Congress for illegal assassinations. Okay. So, you know, you're covered. They're already, you know, they already have a record. So these people, these ex-cons, as it were, now, when you bring them up in this context and you say, look, you know, like, you know, people who are on the deep state research side, they're very familiar with this. Well, the deep state researchers aren't really interested so much in the UFO field because they consider it really to be lightweight, one, and two, fantastical. But then the UFO field doesn't have the gravitas and the heft research-wise of the deep state field. So they miss a lot of cues. They miss that a lot of stuff is connected to the Central Intelligence Agency. And even though they love to go, oh, the government's blocking us and they can't get the records, you know, but they never go to the CIA part, which is the CIA controls the majority of what we're talking about here in relation to the UFO file and the secrecy. The X-Protect work, the group that we've talked about, X-Protect working to suppress information for 8 decades around this, you know, that's all Central Intelligence Agency related. So the backdrop is there. Anyone who researches it knows. So it's very strange to me. It has like a strange echo. You're like, why aren't these people talking about the CIA? And that's what I thought when some of these Lou exposés came out. It's like, where's the CIA part? You know, what the hell happened?
Well, one of the reasons you know so much about the CIA is because of all the research you've done on the JFK assassination.
True.
I mean, how many times have you watched the movie JFK? Right. How many times have you watched The Men Who Killed Kennedy? Right? It's all there. Once you understand, and it's easy to, once you see the template of how they operate, you can see it everywhere. You can't help but see it. right? You can see it in the UFO file.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the way I look at it is there are experts on the Central Intelligence Agency, Professor Peter Dale Scott, Jefferson Morley, former Washington Post employee who found information relating to the JFK assassination. And, you know, they basically didn't want anything to do with it. And then he found a character who was not mentioned in any of the CIA records. So even the CIA records that were slated to come out that were blocked, this guy wasn't even involved because he basically was a non-person. And so Morley brought all these things out in relation to this. So there are experts on the Central Intelligence Agency who can tell us how that operates. Now, if you can take that template and lay it over the UFO field, everything starts to click into place, especially the hearings and the things that we saw today, and them talking about what? Suppressing citizens from researching this on their own. And that's what we're going to get to before this part is over. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report, 5 minutes to your questions here, and we're going to go for another 20, 30 minutes. It's great to have so many of you with us for the special report. And it was prompted by this UFO hearing, which, you know, it's always revealing when they get into these things, even though they're trying to cover things up and just do the kind of theater that they need to get through so that they can arrange funding corridors, so they can arrange a threat program, you know, and so they can do that dance around the UFO file. And, you know, we have to remember that that battle for the UFO file goes heavy into Space Force and Trump getting in instead of Hillary in 2016 when the whole op was set up around DeLong and that whole freak show. So when she didn't get in and Trump got in, we got Space Force. That's also an attempt to pull that UFO file and space control under presidential leadership again. So you have to know what battles are taking place to be able to filter through the things that we're getting on hearings like this. So that's for sure. So when we can get kind of a broader take on this, we're in much better shape. I want to remind you before we go any further, go to darkjournalist.com, sign up for our free newsletter that's going to keep us in touch through the incredible censorship that we've taken on. And I've shown it to so many people. But, you know, the way that I look at it is I'm just going to continue to do the work that I do, and I'm not going to worry too much about the censorship aspects because at the end of the day, I'll broadcast off my iPhone if I have to, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to be taking your questions in a couple minutes. Let's get to the rest of this. Here's some of that threat stuff. Are you ready? Key lawmaker warns at UFO hearing unidentified aerial phenomena are a potential national security threat. Get that threat going. This was pretty funny. One of the objects that they showed during the hearing, and they were like, it's a triangular object. And then it turns out it was like some kind of a lens flare. So I think they intentionally were showing really bad UFO footage for this thing. Because they, look, the government has access to some of the best footage of UFOs on the planet. And I'm sure they're saying to some of the people and being like, you know, the senators and stuff, you can be a real inside person in this. Here, we'll share this much with you. And the problem is that it's a stacked game. And, you know, the House has all the cards. In this case, they're looking at it and saying, you know, we have the 80 years or more of research. We've got the Central Intelligence X-Protect wing. We have all the redevelopment of the UFO file we've done. We have the X technology as a result of these things. You know, why are we going to share that with American people? Especially the things that are happening around the world show consolidation. They don't show, oh, you know, leaders want to help their people be free and prosperous. It looks like they're trying to get rid of everybody, right? So you're not going to get any great movements forward from those people. What could happen is massive disclosure around the UFO file on the ground could force open some of what they have. That's the way you do it. You never go to them, you know, with a beggar's bowl looking for intel secrets. The Central Intelligence Agency is set up to deceive. That's what their job is, in fact. Counterintelligence, Lou, counterintelligence means I have to lie. You know, that's my job. So what is counterintelligence? What are some of the methods? That's something that the UFO field could study instead of people going off about, did Lou make a comment? You know, that doesn't go anywhere. What is that going to do for you? Who cares about Lou Elizondo ultimately, except as a pawn of the CIA threat motion? Otherwise, you know, it's just drivel, right? So, and how, you know, it could be anybody. They could have gotten someone else instead in that program and dressed them up for the part. I don't think, you know, it's not a special kind of assignment that they got for Lou. I just think that he kind of fit what they were doing, and they felt this is a guy who can pull it off. He's done a lot of counterintelligence. But I think what's important is, what is counterintelligence? Just in a nutshell, I need to deceive another country about what my activities are militarily, espionage-wise, etc. And I need them to believe that something is happening that's totally different from what is actually happening. So I need to create a counter narrative to the truth. That's counterintelligence. I need to lie to get people to believe. So therefore, Elizondo has a lot of experience. He's a professional liar. That's just a fact. And you know, expecting the truth from people like that, or the Central Intelligence Agency, counterintelligence agents in general, is craziness. Who ever thought of such a thing? And, you know, so the way they've rolled it out and packaged it up and put a lot of money behind it and the media behind it, yes. But, you know, I think we've come past a phase, like, you know, we are all kind of graduating in our own awareness. And this is pretty obvious, you know. So this one is getting pretty wobbly. By the way, they're still using this lame Tic Tac. And let me tell you, I was reviewing a case in New Zealand, actually, the Cape Coral Lights, and it's very interesting. I've mentioned it before. It's a case from 1978 where a television crew followed UFOs for 2 days around an airport. And, you know, that's better footage shot with a professional team with great witnesses than anything in the Tic Tac grainy, weird gun camera junk footage. So let's get behind, you know, this idea. The Tic Tac type revelation disclosure already happened in 1978 in Australia, okay? And there have always been tons of Navy pilots who are like, I saw a UFO, it did all these incredible maneuvers, and I didn't know what was going on. So all those guys who came forward, you know, around the Tic Tac thing, that's fine. I mean, by the way, if you're a Navy pilot and they want to run an op around you, then you're still going to repeat the same thing if they have the technology and they run the test on you, right? So you'll be honest in saying it. You'll pass a lie detector test if you say this thing did these incredible maneuvers. You'll be honest and you'll be telling the truth, but it doesn't necessarily make it an extraterrestrial vehicle, right? So therefore, there's a lot of levels of interpretation when it comes to things. Sometimes you'll say, well, you know, the TTSA stuff was bunk, and people will say, how dare you defy the Navy pilots? Don't you have any respect for our Navy pilots? And of course, you know, the Navy pilots have been giving us this info, though, and been blocked by the government for decades, right? So when they use a few, cherry pick a few guys that they've done ops on with this Tic Tac thing, it doesn't mean that the Navy pilots are lying. It means that they saw what they saw. But as to what that thing is that they saw, that's a completely different story. So we need to, if you're going to get anywhere on the UFO front with the UFO file, first, the black budget, number one. Two, the Central Intelligence Agency X-Protect wing. And then three, the UFO threat operation, which is in full swing with the Mellon Elizondo piece, right? So we're all up to snuff on this. One more thing language-wise. Oh, I wanted to show everyone this. Just to remember how cool the subject of UFOs is and how fantastic the whole thing is, this is the original drawing of the Rendlesham craft that they saw in England in 1980, and clearly has Egyptian ankhs on it, and it clearly, did you get a good look at that, Miss Olivia?
It's amazing.
I mean, this is what we're talking about.
And who drew that?
Well, it's a drawing based on some of the officers' descriptions of what happened.
Okay.
Yeah. And But just, you know, remember that the field is fascinating and the off-world civilization aspect, absolutely incredible. Let's not forget the incredible experiences that people have had and some of those abduction experiences, contact experiences. This is a field that can be very revelatory and I think is crucial in this period for us to get it right. So a lot of the antagonisms and almost turning the UFO thing into a sports thing where my team is better than yours and you know, the crazy counterintelligence stuff and then people selling out, you know, I mean, it's starting to look like a bad vaudeville show. So let's not forget the core though, which is the field itself and the experiences and the people and the interactions and the possibility of this interaction with these advanced off-world craft and things of this nature. That's very interesting. And that's something that the 70s had right when you go and you look at how they were doing disclosure. The 50s was a fear thing. The 60s was building up, but the 70s had the, you know, oh, it's going to be close encounters. You know, we were meeting as peers, and there was also a big Pleiadian push. I talked about this with JG a little bit, which is that Pleiadian thing seems to attach itself to art, to music, to cultural uplift. There's something in that Pleiadian piece. And I think it's possible that we've had interactions over centuries with cultures exactly like that from off-world, small groups visiting us here. And then when it, you know, by the time you get to the whole 90s craze around the Grays and all that, everything goes off a cliff after 9/11. It goes into a weird terror zone. And so much of the alien research kind of disappears. Then it reappears with the super militaristic. And you have all these military people talking about how to take out those UFOs. And all the talk and the lingo from today was really fear-based threat stuff. That's what you see the most. So therefore, we have to know what we're looking at and what we're dealing with to see the era that we're in versus other eras that have dealt with the exact same subject. But let's not forget in the middle of all this, how fascinating it is. And I wanted to share a picture of myself with one of the great people in ufology who's passed on, but I did a number of shows with him on this program. And this is even before I was doing shows actually, but it's the great Stanton Friedman. And I got a lot from Stanton Friedman, which is he really wanted the facts, but his mind was really open. And so I feel like he did the whole field a great service. And I have more.
Keep going.
But Miss Olivia,
Keep going. No,
I'm going to go with your questions.
And okay, Mr. Action says, who does the CIA serve? It is obviously not the American people.
Well, this is a question that we really should take a look at. And think about it. Where was it born, the Central Intelligence Agency? It was born not in the halls of government. It was born at a New York law firm that dealt with international high finance, Sullivan and Cromwell. I've known people who've worked at Sullivan and Cromwell. And it is an elite group dealing with other elite groups. So it's the top group here in America dealing with the other top groups in Europe. That's where the CIA came from. And it didn't come from a hardened military person who was trying to figure out how to get intelligence. It was Alan Dulles, who was an SNC lawyer. And it came about along with a little thing called the Office of Policy Coordination, which was a very friendly name for what was essentially a terrorist cell that we had that went overseas and did things like threw elections and blew up trains and things of this nature. And somewhere in there, there was thinking, oh, this new Central Intelligence Agency will clean up the act of this other thing. And the other thing subsumed it. And so they became good at, you know, this entire thing. They became revolution. Overthrowing countries and deposing leaders that weren't friendly to us. They had the excuse of the Cold War, and so anything went, you see. So the Central Intelligence Agency grew up with that mentality, and by the time they got to Kennedy, apparently, it's been suggested now through many people who were close to him, even though he knew a lot about the CIA going in, he was shocked at the amount of activities that they were undertaking on their own initiative. He was like, this is ridiculous. They're not the government. How are they doing this? So he started to send them off memos and have meetings and saying, you know, you're not going to do this. This is going to go through the Pentagon, or this is going to go whatever. And he just found that they weren't carrying this out. So this is a battle that goes on for almost 3 years. And then the CIA assassinates President Kennedy. How is that related to the UFO file? Should have been question number one at the hearing today. Has anyone, you know, who got in the way of the secrecy effort on a high level been assassinated, or a low level been assassinated? That should have been question number one, instead of, you know, what do you think of them UAPs? I mean, it's very different. Yeah, it's uncomfortable history, but that's the kind of transparency you would need to go after a subject like this. Otherwise, the same people get in charge of that narrative. And that is absolutely something which is why we're seeing the mass confusion around the planet, because a small group, a powerful group, have their hands on a lot of too much power and too much technology. So there needs to be a leveling. And this is what, you know, part of this is starting to come forward. And there's no question that even the idea of this UFO hearing today is this group trying to stretch out and create this narrative and say, we can roll this thing public, and then we can, you know, seize emergency powers with an alien invasion. The thing is, in the appearance of the UFO invasion, look, this UFO threat thing is real. They've been working on it for a long time. And they will use it the same way, like if they get the opportunity to do martial law, they'll do it. If they think they can pull it off, they'll do it. And that's the thing you need to understand when you're looking at the government. So what you don't want to do is tempt them by giving them that UFO threat. That's why if you thwart it, you'll never see the darkest side of those people, because if it's thwarted, they won't be able to do it. And that's why getting to the bottom of it with dark journalism and with amateur research, as that representative said today. I'm going to play that clip, and then we're going to take the rest of these questions. But this is about a 1 minute clip, so bear with it. It is absolutely fascinating from the hearing today. And I'm going to get to
Mr. Lutt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank the witnesses for being here today. Obviously, this topic of UAPs has attracted a lot of interest in people that are curious about this hearing today. As we talk about, and I would say there's a lot of what I would call amateur interest groups that are involved in the UAP field. My question is, when there are unsubstantiated claims or manufactured claims of UAPs or kind of false information that's put out there, what are the consequences for people that are involved with that or groups that are involved with that?
So one of the concerns that we have is that there are a lot of individuals and groups that are putting information out there that could be considered to be somewhat self-serving. We're trying to do what's in the best interest of, one, the Department of Defense, and then two, what's in the best interest of the public, to ensure that we can put factual-based information back into the mainstream and back into the bloodstream of the reporting media that we have, so people understand what's there. It's important because we are attempting, as this hearing has drawn out, to understand, one, what may just be natural phenomenon, two, what may be sensor phenomenology or things that were happening with sensors, three, what may be legitimate counterintelligence threats to places that we have or bases or installations, or security threats to our platforms. And anything that diverts us off of what we have with the resources that have been allocated to us, send us off in these spurious chases and hunts that are just not helpful. And they also help, they also contribute to the undermining of the confidence that the Congress and the American people have that we are trying to get to the root cause of what's happening here, report on that, and then feed that back into our national security apparatus so we are able to protect the American people and our allies. So it is harmful, it is hurtful, but hopefully if we get more information out there, we'll start to lessen the impact of some of those spurious reports.
So just taking that a step further, so that misinformation, false narratives, manufactured, so what are the consequences? Are there legal consequences? Are there examples that you can give us where people have been held accountable by this misinformation or disinformation?
All right. So he goes on to say, well, I don't have any particular, cases of that, but, you know, maybe with Congress's help, we can figure out a system to do that. This is Congressman Darren LaHood, again, from Illinois, but he was the U.S. attorney for Las Vegas, Nevada. So, you know, that becomes really interesting, doesn't it? And notice how, unlike the other questions, he wants to know how you can prosecute people who are taking a different line on UFO research than the government's official line. That's the question. And then you have, you know, this defense official saying, well, you know, we've got to find a way to do it because that's the only way we can keep the American people safe. Sound familiar? Yeah. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. This is on the UFO hearing today, and it's been pretty wild. You have to go through those layers to get to the source of who is doing this. And the Central Intelligence Agency is behind the UFO threat. Start there. That is what the UFO field needs, is like a jolt. It's like shock therapy. And then everything else, a lot of these other pieces fall into place. And also, in the middle of all this, we need to make room for the true UFO research that's going on, the people who have those experiences, the people who have those sightings, that's non-governmental, nothing to do with that, because they're going to keep using that for their own purposes. And, you know, unfortunately, groups like MUFON don't cut it, because they've just had that weird, you know, Bigelow at one point was a major piece of the problems that they had. But I think that there needs to be something that's a lot better than that, so that the work can continue in a totally different direction. And the CIA circus and the people who want to roll off the cliff with that, you know, that's fine. But it has nothing to do with the actual UFO file research. Yes.
Roosevelt Media News says all they want to talk about is how to criminalize the people. Yeah. The citizens, the American citizens.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Okay, I wanted to read this one. Tina Borich. My dad was in the OSS, precursor to the CIA. He was a secretary to a four-star general. He told my brother before he passed that Roswell was not the first. Germany was. He was stationed in Germany late to early 50s.
Well, see, that makes a lot of sense.
A lot of people believe that. Well, we got the Foo Fighters, right?
Oh, there are major cases. I mean, there's Cape Girardeau, which is 41. That's a major crash case. And that includes bodies. And you've got military personnel, fire personnel, religious clergy involved in that one, giving last rites because they thought it was a plane crash, interestingly enough. So Roswell and the UFO wave that happens with it, and we're coming up now to the 75th anniversary of Roswell right here in early July, coming right up. Think about that. And then the major sighting, the 75th anniversary of Kenneth Arnold's sighting in late June 1947, that's coming up. So we're right in the heart of this. And here they are with a UFO hearing on the, you know, heels of this really incredible anniversaries around the UFO file coming up. Yes.
Here's another one. Planet 702. My grandfather was OSS. He was of German descent. He used to show my mother photos of crafts.
Wow. Yeah. well, listen, there's a great deal in the German history, as it's been pretty well recorded, about them making crafts. And, you know, you have to think there's some tie over with the X technology, which runs on its own. In other words, things that mystery schools have kept as technology over time, that relates to a much older technology and a much greater understanding of the universe and universal energies. So that's there. And when you, by the time you get to Tesla's work, they're kind of rediscovering it or allowing it to come out again. Keeley's work is another one. So that end of the spectrum, which becomes the X technology, is exactly related to the ET tech, reverse engineered tech, that seems to have the same exact effects, those apotheum effects, where the entire universal physics field gets turned upside down. These are the things that happen. So that puts us in a different kind of frame of mind when we look at this. It's easier for us to understand, oh, so the X technology isn't just reverse engineered alien tech. It is, they're both operating that way. Some wing on the planet has also discovered this, probably in ancient times, as we've discussed through the work of Edgar Cayce and the Atlantis research. Every once in a while, you notice they turn on the whole USO thing and they're like, well, maybe it's not a space culture. Maybe it's an undersea culture that we're looking at. And, you know, they're the real threat. I wonder about that, if they're not thinking, wouldn't it be easier if this wasn't a UFO threat? And we'll just say, hey, they're from inner Earth. You know, they got tired of giving Corey Good massages in inner Earth and now they're attacking us. Okay, go ahead. that was worth a guffaw, at least. Go ahead.
Okay, so Mind Control Inc., how does the WHO trying to go global fit into this, Daniel?
Well, that's a big one. And I think that they're coming in from different angles for global emergency powers. Look, the people who are in charge of these places, like Trudeau has 28%. And probably, you know, that's after the trucker thing, it's probably more like 22%. Biden, in polls that favor him, is in the low 30s. And in real polls, is in the 20s. So these people don't have enough to govern. And that's a really big problem. So they're realizing, we're going to need the emergency powers if we're going to go forward. We need the option to press the button. In fact, if you look at it, Trudeau did press the button during the trucker convoy. They got rid of the emergency after 3 days, but still, was there any reason to push that emergency button? No. So the big buildup around continuity of government here in America, I keep seeing the COG go global thing, which is why they're engaging in hot war action around the Russian-Ukraine situation. So, we're getting into territory when if I can come in from the health side and take you over, or I can come in from the but I need the emergency, whatever it is. If I have the alien emergency, great. If I have the WHO emergency, fantastic. But I need that nuclear. I could do it with a nuclear emergency. My feeling is that the UFO op gives them unbelievable leverage, and that's the one that they're building up to with all this. But they need a huge infrastructure first. They need that to become a regular defense program. And that's what the goal of the intelligence agencies, to have a public defense program against UFOs that they can then utilize to say, well, you know, here the UFOs showed up and we're just using that defense grid that we built against them. So they need to suggest there's a threat from UFOs, when on the ground, we haven't seen anything that's a threat. Yes, we've seen that they like to hang around nuclear facilities, but I wonder if they aren't studying the ability that we have to blow each other up. that would make a lot of sense to me, yes.
Vino Zarazzi, where does FEMA fit into all of this?
Well, FEMA is emergency operations. And, I remember, this is a strange story, but it was shortly before the Boston bombing. And they said, we're going to activate this thing called MEMA here in Massachusetts. And it was in Framingham, Mass. And it's Massachusetts' version of FEMA. And the governor went there. There was a snowstorm. And the governor was Deval Patrick. And he went there. And he started making these weird dictations. And he said, if you're driving on the road during the storm, not only will you be fined thousands of dollars, you're going to prison for a year. Now, that had never been done around here. It was just a weird, weird thing to put out. And I wondered to myself, that's a very unpopular thing to do. And people around here, you know, like in Vermont, but in the lesser version here in Boston, they know how to handle snow. So what's the deal? And then 2 months later, the Boston bombing of the marathon happened. And there were these incredible tanks, military tanks, that were going in Cambridge now, right around here, door to door, looking for Zarnoff. brothers. But those were military outfits. They were rolling. So this thing where they had to get everybody off the streets during the snowstorm, it occurred to me they had run something like a drill for this thing that happened for the marathon, which means they knew it was going to come or they knew it was in the works. And so I put those things together that way. That's what I think of in terms of what FEMA is capable of. And on its face, you know, it's supposed to help when there are floods. Carter was the one who actually opened that program up. So his idea was a helpful emergency program for hurricanes and things like that, not of installing a dictator. By the way, if we got continuity of government, you'd be living under the combatant commander of NORTHCOM. And the combatant commander's name is General Van Herk. General Van Herk comes out of the 509th bombing squadron, the 509th group. And that's exactly where Jesse Marcel came out of, who came across all that wonderful Roswell wreckage. So it is quite strange, to say the least. Let's say, at least as a signature, it's very unusual. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist show, whew, that's going deep tonight. It's been a terrific report. We're going to take a few more questions from everyone, and it's fantastic to be with you here on this Tuesday night after the UFO hearing. And I think we got some interesting Freudian slips from the likes of LaHood and Carson. Yes.
Caritas Tarot, does DJ think that Elizondo has or is under mind control?
Oh, boy, is that a good question. No, I should have put up a picture of Elizondo.
I like that Black Fair Lady one.
I've never shown that one publicly, but I will. I will someday. You know, look, Elizondo is somebody who came out and had this mission. And the mission is to create the UFO threat thing. And the story is, I'm the whistleblower and I ran a UFO program and all that stuff. Now that we know the program didn't exist, therefore, if the program didn't exist, he couldn't have led it. Therefore, that entire thing unravels. So all the people who were pumping it up, as I stated at the beginning of the program, the Dolans and the Knapps and the Popes and stuff, they all need to do some kind of major mea culpa about what happened here, and because they got fooled. But here's the question. This guy himself, he's on a counterintelligence mission. And at a certain point, I think they say, we can't use him. There have been a lot of screw-ups publicly. And then they go back and they say, well, we'll redo it. And Christopher Mellon, you know, dumps more money in to make this thing happen. So those people believe in what they're doing, but they don't believe in being honest. That's very apparent. So they're not honest people. So I think the types of control that they're under don't qualify as mind control, but they could be under extreme pressure to accomplish the things that they're trying to do. And I don't think that that pressure is coming from, a noble conscience or anything like that. I think given the way that they handle people who disagree with them, we get a real interesting insight into their character. Excellent question. Yeah. What do you got?
Karen Carpenter, how closely is NORTHCOM connected to the UN forces?
Well, we do a lot of drills. We do a lot of drills in the hot zone on Andros. And actually, the group that works out with NATO and the UN a lot is AUTEC, the group there that deals with the underwater Area 51 off of Andros, close to the Bimini Temple. In terms of NORTHCOM, they're always, doing this liaison thing with UN forces. But I would say that NORTHCOM would be a strategic American command. But you see, America never used to be under a command until 9/11. This is the danger. And what people forget 20 years out is we're now run by NORTHCOM. If there's an emergency, the combatant commander takes over and you have a set of regional governors. That's what they want, because these people are going to realize no matter how many illegal aliens they smuggle in through the border, you can't, that kind of governance is impossible, the type of governance that they're doing. And that's why you have such incredibly low ratings. I mean, look at Biden's record. Biden's record is over 8% inflation, which hasn't been seen since 1981. That's 40 years ago. That kind of stuff didn't exist anymore. So, you know, he plunged us into a losing exit from Afghanistan, which was horrible. He armed the Taliban with $100 billion in the top weapons from the United States. So he's a disaster, and that administration is a disaster. And then he gets us with this push into the Russian and Ukraine situation. And what do? They want to send another $50 billion over to Ukraine for what? What do we have to gain in the Ukraine? Literally. And we can offer them support, but it's our meddling over there that put them so hardcore on Russia's radar, because they said, hey, that's too close for comfort to put NATO. And so we got them into trouble. And now it's all out, you know, in billions of dollars when we're under food shortages and inflation. I mean, this is really looking strange. Like, they're trying to create the emergency scenario because they know they won't have the popularity to actually win an election. So I think there's a lot of things. The best thing that we can do for Ukraine is to, you know, not militarily support them on that level, and not to dump tons of money into a losing strategy. Look, when you look at Ukraine, Russia's going to win in Ukraine. They have a bigger, better army. So the question is, what are the best terms that they can get? And for us to say, you know what, to make things better for Ukraine, we're getting the hell out. We're still going to help Ukraine as much as we can, but, you know, we're not going to antagonize Russia to do it. So there's no peace. Where's the peace process? I mean, every conflict has a peace process. Even the most bleak, you know, Palestinian-Israeli thing has a peace process. There's nothing. Anthony Blinken, you know? I mean, he looks like a washed up soap opera actor. It doesn't, you know, it's not looking good over there. And I don't think that dumping $50 billion, there's 12 senators, all Republicans, who voted against this. So all their Republican colleagues and all the Democrats voting war, war, war. That's all the Democrats know anymore. They used to be the Peace Party. What the heck happened? Those things need to be studied and understood to understand what's trying to take over here. And it ain't aliens. Okay.
Can you go into that a little bit more about Agenda 2030 and, I mean, like the one world government, what we're talking about here? I don't think you can understand what we're seeing now as an op, as a bunch of ops that are
We'll do a show linked around Agenda 30. And I do think that that's important because it's about land grabs. And so you're making the real point. But I want to do a show literally about Agenda 30 and farmland, because I think that's really where it's at. And so that's an excellent suggestion for our next show.
Okay, but I want to say
that,
you know, what you're talking about is demoralization.
Yes.
Right? We are losing faith in our system of governance, in our, quote, leaders, right? So that when it dissolves, when it collapses, we sort of won't care. They want an apathetic citizenry, right? So, and then, you know, we'll shrug at it, you know, who cares anyway? It was kind of broken anyway. That doing this in stages, right? And if anybody who's watched Yuri Bezmenov, right, he talks about demoralization.
Oh, yeah.
And diminished expectations, right? This is so we have inflation. We have nobody's dreaming any big dreams anymore. It's no, who has a life coach? Who cares? Like, you think you can achieve your dreams anymore? No, you know, it's all gone. But now they have these.
I have very special dreams.
It's COVID. It's Ukraine and Russia, right? And so, you know, you have to understand what they're trying emotionally, you know, what they're doing to us.
No, it's true. It's true. And, this is a really important thing, because a culture comes from a place of doing something. Like John F. Kennedy's Camelot came from the space program in the New Frontier of the 1960s. It was a jump off point to say we can be better, do better, and we have a bright future. We're going to be a spacefaring nation, and we're going to have peace, and people are going to be equal. You know, this is where the 60s were originally coming from. So there are groups that had been building up, you know, I mean, far before World War II, but post-World War II, the thought, their plan, their consolidation of power for a smaller group was the plan. So when you put those two together, they had to eliminate that version. And so you got, you know, Manson and Vietnam and this whole thing. So the demoralization thing you're talking about is a program. Absolutely right, 100%. And it's well put, because what they're trying to do now is they drained the life out of the economy and they drained a number of small businesses. In America, you know, small business is such a key part, a cornerstone to life and people's ambitions. And anyone can start a business and become a millionaire or really well off. You know, the possibility is always there. And this is part of the American dream. Now, they don't want the competition. So they want to cut it off and they want to get people ready to accept the UBI, right? So that gets to destroying the heart of the country and the heart of the people's ambitions. So it is a very dangerous place. But the tying all that back into the UFO aspect is interesting, because think about these people who blocked this information for decades and now want it to come out in this weird, haphazard forum. And then they want to create the wave to get the offices going, the UFO Defense Office and the UFO Defense Program, and then boom, the UFO threat. That's how they do it, and that's how they plan to accomplish it. But they've had real missteps pulling it off, and through TTSA, through Elizondo, and through others. So you're looking at a real tricky situation where it's either going to be, you know, they're going to get off that disaster and move into a totally new thing, or they're going to back off this UFO threat thing because we have exposed it. And it takes a lot of that to catch up. But don't you notice it's very interesting that a lot of times we go into things here in the ideas room and then 3 or 4 years later they happen. I've seen a lot of that. And so I feel on this as well, that bringing it into the consciousness of an average person, that, you know, the UFO file thing is fascinating, but their first doorway to it shouldn't be the likes of this stuff. You know, the whole militaristic, we'll get at them, you know, and that whole thing. It should be a totally different, you know, door with all those people and the experiences and the culture. Look, UFO things have happened. Your grandmother, your great grandmother, you know, your father, his family, like these people have all had some type of interaction with this. It's happened. So it's part of our cultural memories. It has nothing to do with a government organization and what they say it is. And when you go deeper into it, you realize there are aspects that we study on our own that actually open this up even more. So therefore, you know, let's go in that direction. And I have no doubt that something on the ground that is explosive in terms of opening the situation up will force more disclosure on the top than going to them with a beggar bowl, because these people are psycho. It seems like, you know, the way that they deal with people is when somebody needs something, you know, or expects something, they think of it as weakness, you know, because they're coming from this real head trip place. So we need to keep all that in mind. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. We're going deep, deep, deep here on the UFO file wars. And we're going to be back with you this weekend. We're going to take two more questions and we're out of here.
Okay, these are linked. Claire Ellis says, this is a preemptive op as needed if midterms do not go their way.
Oh, yeah.
And Kate Garcia says, so what role will Space Force play?
That's a really good question. They're starting to roll the Space Force thing into the UFO file part, which I think is crucial. And the Space Force is still honeycombed with people that Trump set up there. So they haven't done almost anything with Space Force on the Biden side since it's come out. So I feel like, you know, I think they've done a lot of redevelopment there inside the Space Force, and they're trying to get some Biden loyalists going. But Space Force was always unusual. I don't think we even know what the real charter for Space Force is, but I bet it's directly related to the UFO file aspect. And for me, it's one of the strange standout things from the Trump administration that's just hanging out there. And we're all wondering, what was it? What was all that about? And that is someone who was knowledgeable about the UFO file pulling through the Space Force some of that power back under executive control, thinking he was going to win re-election. And he may be thinking now that he's going to win in 2024. So it may be that the Space Force will see it on a whole different level if something like that happens. Yes.
Okay, these are all linked. The gold color says all that BS UFO office is for to fleece the USA citizens out of their own money, more worthless eaters in government. Dandy Dinmont says, why do they need a fundraiser if they can just black project it? Jennifer Mimon says, is it finally time for Project Bluebeam? And Court Files says, so this stage UFO intelligence op is ultimately the means by whereby the government gains a permanent Nazi-like state of militant national security control over we the people?
One of those, they're all very good questions. There's one in there that was about, hey, if this thing is all black project, why do they need the public money? Look, they always think covert and overt. They always have their public puppets, and then they operate in the background. But the covert government at times needs a interface, a public interface. And the Space Force is a real good public interface. It could be one. The one that they're building for the UFO Defense Office, this thing, you know, AIM-SAG or any of the junk names that they have for it now, that whole idea, ASRO, those different pieces are going to be crucial public interface points, because they'll be like, hey, you know what? We need it because those UFOs, they've almost crashed our planes. And, you know, that doesn't happen, by the way. There are plane pilots, they get freaked out when they see these things. So training them that they're there is important. But the idea that, you know, you need a military force to fire them down, I think part of the issues that we've had in the past with UFOs are shoot down orders, because I think we've created hostile situations when it does not look like they've been necessary. We have not seen that kind of hostility from UFOs. And to study, to understand it is a totally different thing to go shooting at it. So, but it is a fascinating question, because a lot of people would say, you know, these guys are all black budget, secret economy, you know, why do they need this thing? It's because there's always some kind of public caricature of a deeper group, and they need that public interface. And if that thing in the meantime for the public people creates like a slush fund that's public, then so much the better. Then all those other people that are around it, you know, that have been pushing to be like the TTSA thing, they all can say to themselves, oh, I'm going to make a lot of money from this as well. So I think that it's an important piece to make part of the national security structure. It's something that they've wanted for a while. There's some very interesting comments from Donald Rumsfeld about a Space Force in 2002 that might be worth looking at. Fantastic questions okay. tonight.
I want to finish on this one.
Yeah.
Bruce Key asks, wouldn't all of this secrecy be impossible if we didn't have so much ignorance among the masses? I would add apathy among the masses. But, you know, what do we have? We have the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial. Right? Everybody's, you should see how many people are watching that. You know, it's like 500,000 at one time live stream, right?
Well, it's better than watching a boxing match over who's going to wear a mask.
This is our fault, really.
Yeah.
Because this is... We have been.
Well, no, this is the thing. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. It's the celebrity obsession and letting ourselves get soft in that regard. Who would ever spend any time watching that? But what do you think of it?
The trial?
Yeah.
To be honest, it's kind of nice to engage with something that is totally irrelevant, right? Because everything is life or death right now.
Right.
And it has been for 2 years. So I think that's the appeal of it. It's like, this has nothing to do with my life at all. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful people fighting over money that they have, right? Millions that they have.
Major
great,
scandal,
you know, yeah. It's like no stakes whatsoever. I mean, among this sort of salacious, juicy stuff. Right. So, but it's just everything. But if you walk away, if you turn away from Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, you're like, oh my God, it's World War III. Like, everything's going to hell and it's unbearable.
Well, I understand that. I mean, I think you get a lot of your own energy back when you don't pay attention to things like that. And I can't imagine spending any energy on it. But, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, there's always been that aspect going on. And you can go back, there are these 1920s Fatty Arbuckle trials and things like that. And everyone wanted those newspapers because they wanted to see what was happening. It's just a part of our unconscious, which, you know, is always looking for these stories. But I remember a book, it's a very, very unusual book, called The Hidden Side of Things by C.W. Ledbetter, a theosophist, and talking about the thought forms that are created around certain things and how dangerous those thought forms can be, you know. So I think at the time he was talking about the search, the hunt for a criminal, and all this public imagination locked onto it. And when you look at that thought form, it just looked like this incredible dark thing. And when you think about it, we have to, at times, I believe, measure where our attention goes. And we may have to pursue dark topics to get answers for things, for sure. But I think the place where our mind sits and what we focus on, you know, grows. So I think that we can get to a better place and a better state of mind and a better world by holding, you know, a good vision about it. And I don't think that that comes from hiding from what the world is, but it comes from seeing through that glaze. So if something that comes about on this program, which is people get tools to see through other people trying to create a reality for them. So we break through these narratives and we get through to something else. And it doesn't mean, oh, the world's all terrible and we should all be cynical because all the leaders are corrupt and everyone around us is corrupt. To the contrary, there are some truly remarkable people taking on this system. And I get a chance to talk with them at times. And, you know, I include RFK Jr. among those. He's really facing a lot of opposition. But a lot of them are right here in the ideas room as well. So, no, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. And don't ever doubt that it is. And with that, everyone, I think we're going to leave the UFO special report there. I'm going to give a couple of shout outs, though. No, you're
okay,
first.
Okay, I have some people thank. And I apologize. I accidentally deleted a couple of donations tonight. But I will shout out everybody that I have.
Thank you.
Jim Sarge 3ID, April Christman, Gil and Joy R, Norman Smith, Borsu, Global Atlantis, Robert Mearns, Doreen Hewitt, Joe Sampson, the Philip K. Dick Film Festival, Eurythmia's Fun, Tricky Vicky, Claire Alice, Erica Swenson Elliott, Bob Bindert, Tim Terabocchia, Robert Scott, Roosevelt Media News, Jay Vanderbest, Esoteric Fairy Tales, and a cult fan. Thank you so much.
Fantastic support, and we really appreciate it. It helps us to do everything we need to do here. And thank you to all our subscribers for keeping us going. And we couldn't do this remarkable work without you. And we always keep that in mind when we're doing it. We will be back this weekend. And remember, we have a double hitter coming up. We're going to lay out a schedule coming up, but there'll be some wild stuff for that Friday before Memorial Day and some very interesting interviews and a new X series episode coming up as well. So just remarkable things. Hang in there and have a great week. And we will see you all on this weekend. I'll do a couple of shout outs here. Frank Monday, it's great to see you. Per Adwa Ad Astra, through difficulty to the stars. If I could read the rest of that, I would. El Kider, great to see ya. Temperature problems, stop bugs breeding, too cold. It's not the truth. It's really, really hot here. Funny you should say that. Occult fan, thank you very much. It's great to see you, sir. Roosevelt Media is out there. Go the Aussies, DJ. Yes, I really, truly hope conditions get better in Australia. And, you know, they were just on such overdrive there with the fascist edge that I really consider it an international problem, the way that they've handled Australia. And but incredible, incredible people there in Oz. And I'd love to get down there sometime. Esoteric fairy tales. Exactly right. Ah, that's a response over there. Melissa, it's great to see you out there. Let's see if I can do this. Kat, we had over 2,000 wonderful souls tonight in the live chat room, Dr. Jones. Incredible. Just, you know, really needed to do the special report tonight. And thank you very much, Miss Olivia, because short notice and all, and a remarkable, remarkable job that you did with everything. Come surfing, DJ. Yes, sir. Can you imagine that?
I will go surfing. I've always wanted to try surfing.
Astro Sam, thank you. It's great to see you. Good luck, Kat. I like that one. Vincetti, Nick Malone, Mermaid in the USA. I love Olivia's voice. That's nice. Aww. That's what Mermaid said. Thanks, y'all. Clear picture. Rebecca, thank you very much. When is the astrology episode? You know, I'm working on it. Boy, did I get some interesting suggestions from people. And I know that you got some interesting ones. So we'll figure that one out.
Reach out to some people.
It's coming close. It's getting closer. Make your vote count in Australia this weekend. Exactly. There's some primaries tonight as well. So there's going to be some interesting political wave going on. Yeah.
Havardian wants to know, when is Farrell back on? He's coming on. You're interviewing him next week, right?
He's going to be, he'll be on shortly. Mm-hmm. That much. We've already talked and we know what we're going to get into and it's going to be pretty wild. So it's so great to have the doctor back. He really is on overdrive. Max Little, thank you so much. Great to see you. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Kelly Green. Love everyone who has anything to do with the show, pretty much. Thank you. Wow. We really appreciate that. Najat. Absolutely great. Great to see you. Esther Taylor. Whew, great crowd in here tonight, of course. Fantastic. We will see you all next week. And on the UFO file, hey, look, you know, I have my advice is pretty simple. no CIA and the UFO file work. That's rule number one. Rule number two, let's work with each other on it and let's find those great cases and great information together. It is a fascinating subject and we're going to do well with it. We're not going to wait around for the CIA folks and the weirdness they want to pull. And we're not going to let the UFO thing become militarized. Let's really make that a promise. We will see you all Friday and have a great week, everyone. Thanks so much for making our night fun and unbelievable, unbelievable group tonight. And you know, it says end broadcast, but after all,
never really ends.
It never really ends. We'll see you all next week.
God bless.
Loving the alien. Roosevelt, I will. Have a good night, everyone.